Hi, you're listening to the My Body, My Story podcast.
You have to accept all of you in and out, you know, not just, what clothes you're wearing. I've learned that that makes not much difference to changing your body image.
This is the 45 over 45 chapter where we celebrate rule breakers and role models, the women who inspire us to live life our way and to show their sensuality, beauty, soul, and true essence. Here, we talk about what it's like to be 45 plus, adjusting to the changes that come with time, and we listen to the stories of our participants. If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a K-S. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the My Body, My Story project. And today with us in the studio, Kylie. And while she's sitting in the makeup chair and Chitra is doing makeup for her, I'm going to ask her a few questions. Morning, Kylie. Welcome to the studio.
Good morning.
Let's start and tell us 10 facts about yourself.
Okay. Well, for starters, I am 53 years old. Mm-hmm. I have 4 children. So my eldest is a boy and he is 30.
Wow. Then, big boy.
Yeah, then my daughter is 18, going on 19. And then I'm also a twin mum, so I've got identical twin boys who are 14.
Oh, it must have been exciting.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I went
for 3 and ended up with 4. So I feel very blessed to be a twin mum.
Are they boys, girls?
Yeah, boys, and they're identical.
Identical,
as well.
Yeah.
So they look.
Do they look exactly the same?
Fairly much. They look different now that they're older because they're, you know, different styles with hair and things like that. But if you just look at their faces, yes, they're very, very identical. Very opposite in personalities, though.
Yeah, as it usually happens. We have in family twins as well, and I know that they look very much similar, but completely different characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I live on the Central Coast in New South Wales. And I'm a teacher. I'm a new teacher. I've changed my career as I got older. I used to be a corporate and work for disability. And then I left there and became a counsellor. Mm-hmm. And then from then I decided, nope, I wanted to go back to my childhood dream of being a teacher. So changed my career mid-year, so midlife crisis, I think. So, but I love being a teacher. I have a year one class, which they are just delightful. So really much enjoying that.
Are they just the kids who first start in the school, year one?
Year or one, so a second year
KG
at school. Yeah, they're in kindergarten first and then they go on to year one. Mm-hmm. So they've already kind of gotten used to schooling. Mm-hmm. And now they're sort of starting to learn. They want to learn. It's actually a really, really lovely age. So they're all 6 and 7. So I really adore being a teacher. What else about me? My favourite colour, I love purple, absolutely love the colour purple. And I think it sort of stems from my spiritual side a little bit. I'm quite a spiritual person. So apart from my counselling, I also I'm a Reiki practitioner, massage therapist, meditation teacher. So I have all those skills up my sleeve as well.
Do you do it as a private practice?
I used to. Mm-hmm. In between, while I was studying to become a teacher, I used to do it as private practice. I had my own business at that point in time, doing counselling and sort of like holistic healing, holistic therapy. Mm-hmm. So don't do that now, but would love to get back to it maybe one day when I'm a bit older again, when I'm sort of maybe got somewhere to do it. I used to have a room that I could do it in, so whereas now I don't really have the space. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a little bit about that.
Were you always, you were born in the Central Coast or you moved there?
No, I was born in Sydney. I grew up in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I moved up to the Central Coast when I was 27, so, and have been there since then, so quite a few years now.
So where do you prefer?
Oh, definitely the Central Coast. Yeah. I really don't like Sydney that much. I grew up out at Panania, which is sort of out Bankstown way. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so would much prefer to be on the coast near the beaches. It's a much nicer place, although it's getting very, very busy these days.
People are moving there.
Yeah, a lot more people are moving up from Sydney, especially since COVID. I think that made a big difference since COVID.
Yep.
Having more people come up, like with the commuting, like they didn't have to commute anymore. So mm-hmm. with being able to work from home.
So how do you manage the 4 kids? I know your husband is sitting next to you now in the yes. studio. Probably he can tell the story as well, but I want to hear from you. So how do you manage?
Manage 4 children. Well, it's much easier now, obviously, that they're older. So my eldest, you know, my 2 eldest don't live at home anymore. Mm-hmm. So I only have the twins at home. So, and they're very self-sufficient now, but It was quite difficult when they were younger. There was a big age gap between my eldest son and my daughter. Mm-hmm. So he was actually a big help when we were young, like sort of when the twins were babies, because mm-hmm. He was 16 at that time. So I could sort of get him to help out with babysitting, and he had girlfriends that would want to come over and babysit the
play
twins.
Play
with the twins. And my daughter was 4 at the time, so that was quite hectic, having, you know, twins and a 4-year-old, but a very demanding 4-year-old. So,
do you have any funny stories? What they did? That usually everyone has stories about twins.
So many. They definitely paired with each other. Worked in pairs. Like they would, you know, one would push something over, or one would stand on his knees, and the other one would stand on top to climb up. So they would. Definitely utilize each other. They would climb outside of the cots and climb into the other cot to be together. What else do they do? They would always share their dummies, just swap them over. Mm-hmm. I do have one of those twin stories, which was pretty amazing, which I didn't believe myself. When the twins were about 2.5, one of the twins got some glass in his foot.
Ooh.
And we had to get him put under to get the glass cut out. So I was fortunate to have a nanny at the time. So she was at home with the twins, or with the one twin that was at home. And I was in hospital, obviously, with the other twin. And I checked the time that my twin, James is his name, that James went under. And it was 9:30 exactly. And then he was under for 45 minutes. And I didn't ring my nanny until probably about lunchtime. Mm-hmm. Once, you know, James had come out of surgery and he was all good, rang my nanny to check how John, that's the other twin, was doing at home. And she said, oh, he was really weird this morning. She said he took his bear about 9:30 and decided to go to sleep, and that's not normally in his sleep routine. Mm-hmm. So, and we had the twins on a very, very strict routine. We needed to have them on a strict routine. Mm-hmm. So it was really odd for him at 9:30 to be, and she said he was just really, really sleepy, just wanted to go to sleep. Wow. And I said, wow, that's crazy. I said, what time? How long did he, you know, how long was it for? And she said, oh, probably till about, you know, 10 o'clock, 10:15, something like that. And then he wanted some morning tea and he was all good and wanted to play again. I went, oh, that was almost the same time that James was under the anaesthetic. So
wow. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was. And they always used to, you know, if one hurt themselves, the other one would hurt the same or the opposite leg or the opposite arm within a day or so of each other. So there was always that
like
connection.
Mirroring each other.
Yeah. We did a bit of research. They actually classify them as mirror twins. So because they are opposite, like James kicks with his right foot and John kicks with his left foot. So
he's left-handed?
Yeah. He writes right-handed, but he does a lot of things left-handed. So
this is ambidexter.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting being a twin mum.
Have they tried change, like pretending being...
Yes. They don't get away with it very well because their personalities are completely opposite.
Yeah, of course.
People can pick up very quickly. So they could get away by looks, but they would have to actually adopt the other's personality as well if they wanted to try and get away with that.
Yeah.
Although one at school, just recently, one got into trouble. Just before they got his hair cut, when they actually had the same hairstyle, one of the twins got in trouble for not being in class, but he was actually in the right class, but it was the teacher got them mixed up, so that was interesting.
It's the teacher's fault.
Yeah, it was the teacher's fault, and he said, no, I'm John, not James.
Are you teaching in the same school?
No. So they're in high school and I'm in a primary school.
Not to see that. No,
I don't want to teach in their
witness
school.
Witness it.
No, they wouldn't like me teaching, I don't think, in their school. So.
Do you have any pets at home?
Or? Yes, I have lots of animals. I'm an absolute animal lover. We have three dogs at home and two cats. We did have four, but we just lost one recently.
Mm-hmm. What's it called, breed?
Breeds. So I've got a mini dash hound, a spoodle, so she's a bit of a mixer. And our other one is a rescue dog, and she's a boxer cross.
Wow,
so,
boxer.
Yeah, so they're all beautiful dogs, and the cats are just tabby cats.
So they're all different breeds? Like
yes.
You don't have any preferences, you just generally like...
Yep, just dogs. Yeah. Just animals just absolutely love animals. My favourite animal is a giraffe, and everyone knows that.
Giraffe?
Giraffe, yeah. Even my children at school know that I love giraffes.
Do you collect?
Yes.
Giraffes?
We have giraffes in every room in the house. So my family sort of say we have too many giraffes, and I say, no, we don't have enough giraffes. We can always have more giraffes. So I used to rescue animals as well. I used to rescue Australian wildlife. Mm-hmm. So I've raised 8 orphaned baby possums and put them back out into the wild. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Done a lot of rescues, so that was an interesting time of my life. I really enjoyed doing that.
So but how do you, or used to travel when it's like 6 of you, 4 kids, and like how did you manage
that? We had a 7-seater. Seven-seater car, yeah.
So you just travel within Australia?
Yeah, well we just go local holidays. Most of our travel that we've done with the three younger ones, because the older one, he like being such a big age gap, he never used to come with us very often. Yeah. So it's only the three, so it's
manageable.
A lot more manageable, yes. Yeah. So it's more of a family of 5 rather than.
And the age difference is only 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years between my daughter and the twins. So, but they. It's easier to travel without my daughter. So
what is it, teenage?
Yeah, teenage. She's very particular with stuff. So but it's still good to have her there as well. Like it's just I think that it's more because she's the only one, whereas the twins have each other to play with. Mm-hmm. So that kind of like made it just that little bit different. It meant I had to play with her or I had to be involved with her sort of thing, whereas the twins would go off and play on their own, or they could go to the pool on their own or something like that. It's where she didn't want to do that, so it made it sort of, she didn't like being the odd one out kind of thing. We used to sometimes take a friend for her as well, so we have done that in past
to have company for her.
Yeah, so she's got someone to play with as well, but obviously now that she's 18 it doesn't play the fact anymore.
So did you travel abroad?
We have been overseas, yeah. We've been to Thailand and Fiji with the kids. No, we didn't go to Fiji. Yes, I did go to Fiji with the kids. And Thailand, that's the only overseas travel that I've done with the kids. Yeah, I took my eldest when he was 21. I took him over to the States for his 21st. Mm-hmm. So that was just me, him and my sister. So that was a nice, fun trip. So the twins and my daughter stayed at home. And that was just me having some time off, not being a mum.
Do you have this time for each child, just you and him or her, or it just was for 21st birthday? Because I'm wondering I have only one son. And I'm just thinking, what if I have more kids? How would I show each of them that, I can dedicate some time? Or, I know some family have just parent and the kid. One day they spend together and just for him or for her.
Sometimes when they were littler, I used to do a lot of things specifically with my daughter. And my eldest I would do because of such an age gap. So he had me on his own for quite some time. So he'd already had a lot of that one-on-one attention. Mm-hmm. But I still had to remember that he was still there needing me as well. So we would just do different things with him. And so I'd do the special, you know, like we'd go on a shopping trip, or I'd take her to the hairdressers, or, you know, we'd just do a little, or even out to lunch sometimes, things like that. And the twins were more often always together when they were smaller. It's probably only as they've gotten older that I've been able to kind of sit and do something separate with them. But we don't necessarily, it's still quite often they're, you know, things we do is often still together.
They have each other.
Yeah, they do. But now that they're older, they have a lot of different interests as well. So one of them is really sporty. So he gets a lot of one-on-one attention with his sport. And the other one is quite introvert and quite happy to just stay inside his room on the computers. Just, so he doesn't actually need, he doesn't demand attention, or he doesn't need attention as much. And I guess to give him that quality attention, it would be following him on a game or watching him play a game or something like that. And he's quite happy for that kind of one-on-one attention, just showing that interest, I think, more so. Showing interest in their interests is where you give that one-on-one.
So that's how you spread your love between
So what do you need from me today? What do you need? My daughter's, she's always needed a lot more. But, you know, that's just the way it is, and that's fine.
It's girls.
Yeah, it's girls. Girls need a lot of attention. So.
Okay, so is there everything you wanted to tell us about yourself?
Oh, I think so. That's quite a lot.
Yeah. So let's move to the aging and body image block of questions.
Yeah.
And my first question here is, what does aging mean to you?
So aging to me is like it's growth. I believe it's that transition in life. So we grow, like as we grow in wisdom, like inner knowing, our intuition, and it's, we develop all the things that we need to transition through life. So I know our bodies age and our minds age and things like that, but I think it's more that, just that journey through life, of exploring and examining what life is.
So how you perceive the aging for yourself, is it more of a good thing or?
I've had mixed feelings. I've enjoyed growing as a person. I've enjoyed growing mentally. I think I've grown an absolute, you know, a huge amount mentally. Physically, I kind of wish I could go back to being a bit younger physically. I have a lot of issues with my body in particular. So, you know, I have a functional neurological disorder and I have fibromyalgia. So that kind of stops my body from wanting to do a lot of things that my brain still wants to do. It's like my body doesn't keep up with my brain. So I don't like that part of aging. And I, you know, think that that's only going to get worse as you get older, kind of thing. And that's the only reason why I don't necessarily want to get older, because I'm sort of scared of what my body might do. But the mental journey, I think, is amazing. You know, that just that, how you change over the years and how you mature and how you adapt and cope with different things and how your resilience builds and how you learn about yourself and learn, you know, and even all your trials that you go through in life and all the bad things that happen, you know, they actually teach you so much about yourself. So I would refer to aging more as that.
So you mentioned about going back in time. So
yeah.
my next question is, if you could go back to any age, what it would be, why, and what advice would you give yourself at this age?
If I had to think about this question for a fair bit. So I originally first thought sort of around my 30s, but that was really trying emotionally for me. So I thought, no, I don't want to go back that far. So I actually thought probably around 45, believe it or not, which is not that far back. But at around 45, to me, I really had my, I had it together mentally, I think. I'd actually learnt to love myself as a human, as a person. I'd learnt to accept everything that I am. Mm-hmm. Obviously, my children were a little bit older, so it was easier. I could actually start doing things for myself again without having to be totally, you know, have my children totally dependent upon me. So I could sort of start enjoying life a little bit more for myself again. So I think, yeah, around about 45 for those reasons. What would I tell myself? Definitely to look after your body. Eat better, like eat well, drink plenty of water, exercise, you know, really nourish it, fuel it well and nourish your body. Mind, body and spirit, you know, not just physically.
Physical, yeah.
Yeah, but also, you know, mentally as well, just really to really look after it. Because you only have one body, so I think that's important to really look after yourself.
And if your body could talk, what do you think it would tell you
or
ask you?
Yeah. Right now, it'd definitely be telling me to practice more wellness, exercise, drink well, do all those things that I would have told myself at 45 that I'm only just starting to do now. So, but my body is screaming out for, hydration, yeah, healthy food, hydration, moving, exercise, relaxation. You know, I've always been a very busy person, never really had time to stop. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think it's very important that we do have those times where you do have downtime, you do stop, you do relax.
And don't feel guilty about it.
Absolutely, definitely. Get rid of those guilt feelings that we all have. I think society tells us that we should be doing everything, you know, and especially as a mother and a working mother, you know, you've got to be everything. You've got to do everything for everybody, and it's very tiring, very, very tiring, and you're always the first one that gets put aside. You know, and it shouldn't be that, because you lose all the energy then for everybody else. So
I know that your twins are still living with you, but didn't you have the feeling like the first child left home, the second one, that you have like a lot of empty space you need to fill?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's like, what do I fill my time with? And that's something that's actually scaring me a little bit. And it started when my son first left home. I cried for a month when he told me he was moving out. Mm-hmm. He was my first one. That was a bit heartbreaking. But you get that, who am I if I'm not a mother?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, what do I like? What are my interests? What will I do, you know, when I'm not having to be there 24/7 for those kids? And it's a long battle. It's a long... a lot of thought processes, because you have to rediscover yourself as a person.
Find your new identity.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not an easy task to do. And then you're also going through, like, you know, going through menopause, for example, you're going through a lot of your own emotions as well. So I wouldn't say I've found my identity yet. I really don't. I still don't know what I'm going to do when the twins are completely...
Well, you switched to being a teacher. It's the first
step. Yeah, I'd have to travel more with my husband. We've sort of talked about going around Australia and things like that. So we'll just do things together. And
so this is your bucket list?
Yeah, start ticking things off.
So where are you planning to go?
Oh, there's lots of places. It. Yeah, we would love to go to sort of Austria, places like that. Mm. Around Australia, we want to get a camper van and motorhome or something, and just go around Australia, mm-hmm. see more of home.
Is there any place in Australia where you always wanted to visit and never been there?
I would really like to go up to the Daintree. I would like to go down to the 12 Apostles, and I would really like to see Uluru. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that I would just like to feel connected to the earth. Mm-hmm. And anywhere where there's...
And you've never been there?
No, never been. Mostly been to sort of cities. So been to Queensland, you know, Victoria, Melbourne, been over to WA, been to some places in Western Australia. Brief stop in Darwin, been to Tasmania. I'd like to see more of Tasmania as well. I'd like to sort of do a little bit more around that. So there's, I mean, there's so much beauty in Australia, so much that you could see.
Yeah, that's true.
I like nature, so it'd be nice to be, you know, wherever there's those natural forms and things like that, I would love to see.
So coming back to the body image questions, what do you think are the main causes of body image issues?
I think our media has a lot to do with it, society, you know, the expectations, and it's been around for a very, very long time on what expectations, and it's not just, you know, women, it's men as well, but it seems to be a lot more prominent in women, about the way you should look, the way you should act, you know, even diets, you know, what's the newest trend, what you should be. There's always so much information about there that puts a lot of pressure. And now that social media is even, you know, more so out there, it's even harder on our younger girls and young boys as well to have to look a certain way and be a certain way. I think that definitely has to play. You know, even fashion, you know, what do you wear? What's the latest fashion? Do you keep up with the fashion? Do you go against the grain? It tends to be if you go against the grain, you seem to be an outcast. I think, you know, a lot needs to be changed. And I think that a lot of people have tried, but I don't think it's still there. There's still a lot of image issues out there because of that.
Do you think women are more sensitive to that subject than men, or you think that because you have kids, boys and girls,
yeah,
so you can compare, or boys can also have those issues, or they're not that
Boys definitely
worried
definitely
about
have those issues, yeah. They may not show it the same way as girls do, but they definitely have them. I mean, I see it in my own sons, how they you know, they're worried about what people think, how they look, and, you know, things like, especially into teenagehood, not so much obviously when they're younger, but coming into teenagehood, it's, you know, it's more important that they've got the hair the way that they want it and the clothes the way that they want and things like that. So they definitely, like, and even in older men, like, you see a lot of, like, you know, why are all these men, you know, having to bodybuild and things like that? Are they doing it because it's a sport, or are they doing it to the way they want to look?
And we need to ask them.
Yeah, well, a lot of cases I think it's the way to look.
Yeah.
You know, keeping up with the Joneses sometimes, or just, you know, that being that trend that's out there. So it can definitely be men as well, but it definitely is very, very prominent in a lot of women.
So it's like a human problem, not only women's problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And now when you have all the mixed genders as well, like, that's creating another level, another layer to image and the way, or what's accepted, what's not accepted in society. So we have so many layers out there of what we should be, should look like, you know, should act. It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm just wondering that where it starts, that who starts the trend? I know that there's fashion and, you know, why it's so effective, you know, why this social... I think it's to do with also social role or social place or acceptance in the society. You know, the way you look, it's kind of an indicator. You know, it's like a short card. People judge you.
Yeah.
You know, like, who are you? Like, if you're driving a good car, you dress well, you fit, like, oh, you must be wealthy or whatever.
Yeah, there is definitely a lot of judgment in society, for sure, about different things. Even, you know, even people that don't have a lot, you know, the way that people kind of look down on them. So there's... Like, they talk about equalism, like, you know, being equality and things like that. There's definitely not equality out there. I don't know what anyone says. It's like you can clearly see it in so many ways. And I think it definitely does come from that acceptance, that society. I mean, humans are very social creatures. You're right. I think it is that acceptance into society. Where do you fit? Where do you fit in society? And I think these days we have a lot of people trying to break out of that, of where they fit, you know, trying to fit on their own or be on their own. Yeah. And that's causing, you know, the people that say, no, you've got to be part of this, and it's, you know, getting a lot of issues happening there.
It's interesting. It also depends on the culture or country.
Yeah.
And for example, I lived in Dubai for 13 years, and it's a very show-off kind of environment.
Yeah.
And it's common to, if you're wealthy, to show it. Like, yes, I have that and this. And people actually judge you by your look, by the car you drive, or what you wear, or the dress, yeah, brands, or whatever. And when I moved to Australia, and I noticed that it's even the bad manner to show off your wealth, or like, it's not a common, I don't know, maybe I've got the wrong impression, but I feel like it's not a good thing to show off.
I would probably tend to agree. I mean, it depends on where you sit in society, I think, on that level.
Generally.
I think, yeah, generally overall, I think it's that sort of middle upper. It's not quite, you know, you're not quite up. I think it's that just above middle or sort of higher middle level, mm, is where it's the more acceptable or the more want to be kind of thing, kind of level that people tend to aim for, mm-hmm, or be accepted more so for. I wouldn't say aim for, more accepted at that level. Whereas if you're lower caste or don't have a lot of money, you know, you tend to be looked down upon. If you're really rich, you tend to be, you know, judged and, you know, classified as like a snob or something like that, you know. So it is sitting in that middle area, I think, in Australia. But you're right, culturally definitely changes the way you should look, what is accepted, how do you fit into society, or how do you fit into your culture. And Australia being very multicultural, it's I think there's a lot of challenges within Australia on so many different levels.
Mm-hmm. It's because it's a multicultural environment.
Yeah.
Every nation brings their own tradition, yeah, rules, and then it's mixed all together in this big pot, and it creates its own kind of a atmosphere.
Yeah, and you wonder why our you know, our teenagers and our youth get confused about where they should fit or where they should see, especially if they are from somebody from, you know, different cultures, mm, like a multicultural family. That's, you know, now being raised in Australia, or I think it's very confusing out there.
But what I learned, that multicultural environment helps people to be more developed, you know, they're not stuck with one culture, and they put an environment where they have to try and understand,
yes,
different nationalities, habits, you know, like traditions. It doesn't mean that they take it, but I mean, dealing with that, it just makes them more flexible.
Yeah, it grows the mind. It broadens the. Mm.
In your school, do you have a multicultural, different nationalities, or like?
Yeah, definitely. I think all schools do these days. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of Indigenous as well. So you have, you know, you've got your Indigenous, but then you've got your, you know, other countries as well. It's not a huge, they're there, but it's not a major. Whereas if you go to sort of like, for example, some of the schools in Sydney, it's a lot more prominent. Mm-hmm. So in my class, I've got a mixture. Most of them are Australian in my class, or the children are. Parents come from various backgrounds. Mm-hmm. We had that discussion the other day, actually, from the different backgrounds of the children. You know, we've got like Macedonia, we've got Scotland, Dutch. What else is in the class that they were talking about? I can't remember now. There was quite a few different ranges, mm-hmm, of Fijian. I've got a little Fijian girl in my class. She's adorable. there's a few, but not a huge, like, it's not a broad range as such.
How do you think negative body image can affect relationship? I'm talking about not only men, women, couple, or friends, co-workers, like any type of relationship.
I think it definitely impacts all relationships. Because if you're not happy with who you are as a person, or if you've got a poor or a low body image of your own, then you're going to struggle to be accepted. If you can't accept yourself, how can others kind of accept you? And I think that can cause some conflicts in all kinds of relationships. On an intimacy level, and when you talk about intimacy, as you, you know, like that can be in a couple, but you have intimacy in all kinds of relationships. And that's that trust and, you know, opening up to people. So if you're not comfortable with yourself, you might not necessarily be comfortable with opening up to other people. Mm-hmm. So co-workers, etc.
Yeah, the same.
Yeah, it's all the same. And I think in personal relationships, I think it can definitely impact because, you sort of want to shy away from your body. You don't want your partner maybe to see your body the way it is. Mm. And then that can impact then on your partner because then your partner thinks that you're not interested in them because you're trying to, and it, you know, you go round and round and round in circles. Yeah. And you know, in friendships, you know, what such and such wearing, you know, can I meet up with that person, especially in our younger ones? You know, I need to, you know, be that, I mean, I need to look like that. You know, they've got better clothes than me, or they look nicer, their hair's better than me, or they wear their makeup better. All those kind of things impact on friendships as well. Even to the thing what I know my daughter says often, like she'll see a top or something that she likes in the shop and she goes, oh, I really like that, but I'm not going to buy it because my friend's got it already. So, you know, I think so that's impacting on so many different levels with
and
just
choices.
On choices, yeah. It sort of limits her choices of being able to, well, just buy it, but just don't wear it on the same day or something, you know. So I think it definitely affects all, and it can create quite toxic toxicity in a lot of relationships as well. So
insecurity usually attracts toxicity.
Yeah, definitely. So it's something that should be dealt with and overcome in somebody if they have a poor body image. I think that's something that they need to work on. And I'm coming from somebody that has had a poor body image for a very, very long time. There was, you know, and I think it was from, you know, growing up, how I felt about myself growing up, my mother, and I think this is where it impacts on relationships as well, is how it travels through families. Mm-hmm. And I know my mother had very, very low self-esteem and very, so she didn't actually teach me to be, you know, have high self-esteem. My mother wasn't somebody for makeup or, you know, dressing herself up or anything like that. So I never kind of learnt those kind of things, and I had to find my own way and find my own self there. And, you know, I got teased for certain parts of your body when you were younger, and then that impacts as well as you grow up. So I had a lot of time, and I still have some issues there that I still, you know, worry about or don't necessarily like. Mm-hmm. But I've come to accept it a lot more now than what I did when I was younger. So I think if everyone can go through that journey of just accepting and, you know, you are what you are, you know.
But it is a journey. It doesn't come easy.
No.
Accepting yourself. So what is your go-to ways to overcome your body insecurities when they come up?
I remind myself of my good qualities. Mm-hmm. I remind myself of the, you know, the positive things. You know, I might, for example, I might walk past the mirror if I'm having a bad day. I might walk past the mirror and go, oh my God, that's just gross, and just keep walking. But then I'll stop myself in thought and go, no, you can't say that. You've got to be kinder to yourself. So it's just being aware, being conscious of that thought process that you have. And
so it's more of a mental support.
Yeah,
to yourself. Has it changed with age? What did you do when you were younger?
When I was younger, I would probably try and change the way I look somehow by changing my hair or, you know, getting different clothes or something like that. Whereas now it's more that mental acceptance, yeah. Definitely. Sort of, you know, you have to accept all of you in and out, you know, not just, you know, what clothes you're wearing. I've learned that that makes not much difference to changing your body image. You might look, you know, you might feel better in certain clothes, but it's only very short-lived. It doesn't last long. It only lasts while you're wearing those clothes, kind of thing. So
my last question is, if you have any favorite quote or about being a woman or saying, or maybe your own thoughts.
Yeah, I did actually find, I found a couple. I was sort of looking for some things and I actually found a couple that I actually joined together rather than individually. And I really liked this: being a woman is a superpower, the power to create, nurture and transform. So I really love that sort of quote, because as a woman, we have the power to create life, but we get to transform our lives. We get to, you know, our nurturing and our caring helps transform others' lives as well. I think we can inspire a lot of others. That quote sort of really resonated with me.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you, Kylie. Thank you very much for joining the project, and I hope you will enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to see the finished product.
Thank you. That was good.
Smooth. Yeah. Apart from the coughing session.
No, that's fine. We had women who wanted to stop because they don't care.
If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a K-S. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.